Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Today we're undertaking an exploration into a really significant area, the landscape of Kurdish archival materials here in Germany.
And it's a landscape shaped profoundly by demographics. Germany is home to, by most accounts, the largest Kurdish diaspora globally.
Right.
Estimates range quite a bit, you know, from maybe 800,000 up to potentially 2 million people.
Wow, that's a huge range.
It is. And this massive population, their history of migration here, their ongoing ties to their homelands, it all creates this deep need to document their experiences, their contributions, their struggles, and their cultural continuity within Germany.
It feels like this mirrors a broader trend we've seen recently in academic circles, doesn't it? This archival turn in Kurdish studies since the early 21st century. Mm-hmm. It's like a conscious move away from maybe just traditional state archives, which, let's face it, often omit or distort Kurdish narratives.
Exactly.
Towards embracing a much wider array of sources, things like personal papers, documents from diaspora organizations, maybe even newly accessible European state archives.
Exactly. And what the sources we looked at highlight is the promise this shift holds. By looking at these diverse materials, we gain, you know, new insights into the dynamics of diaspora communities, how transnational networks operate, and the social history of Kurds living outside their homelands.
So these archives serve more than just a historical purpose, then?
Oh, absolutely. What's really crucial here, according to our sources, is their dual role. Firstly, yes, they are vital for preserving cultural heritage, language, collective memory, identity, especially for a people often facing pressure or, you know, attempts at erasure in their home regions.
Right.
But equally important, these archives become active sites for contesting official narratives.
How so?
Well, whether those are narratives from Germany, maybe related to integration or security policies, or from the countries of origin, which might deny Kurdish identity or history altogether. The very act of creating, preserving, and accessing these archives can be in itself a powerful political statement.
And the different waves of Kurdish migration to Germany, thinking about the Gastarbeiter programs back in the 60s and 70s, then political refugees from the 80s onwards, and more recent arrivals that must have generated a really varied set of potential materials.
Precisely. You'd expect to find, well, pretty much everything from early labor contracts, personal letters detailing those first migration experiences, through extensive activist materials from periods of intense political struggle, all the way to potentially digital communications and social media records from the most recent refugee flows. This historical layering creates a complex but incredibly rich landscape for researchers and for the community itself.
That really sets the stage. So our aim today is basically to guide you through the key types of Kurdish archival materials discussed in our sources to understand what they are and why they matter so much.
Let's do it.
Okay, let's start with the major institutional players. Where do we find the key centers, the big ones dedicated to collecting and preserving Kurdish history and culture here in Germany?
Yeah, it's fascinating how these centers in Germany function almost like, I don't know, essential national libraries or archives for Kurdish studies in the diaspora.
Because it's difficult in the homelands.
Exactly, given the historical constraints on collecting and accessing such materials there. So these places become vital hubs, really, for both academic researchers and the Kurdish community itself.
Okay, so tell us about the Europäisches Zentrum für Kurdisches Studien, the EZKS in Berlin. The sources describe it as a private research institute set up in 1999. What's its focus?
The EZKS's core mission, as described, is pretty broad and interdisciplinary. It's about engaging with Kurdistan and Kurds, both in the homeland and the diaspora. And there's a particular emphasis mentioned that includes human rights.
Yeah.
But the absolute cornerstone, the key resource there, is definitely their library.
And the sources highlight its significance.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
It's specifically identified as the largest library in Germany, specializing in Kurdistan and the Kurdish people. And what's truly remarkable is its scale. We're talking over 17,500 titles, roughly, in humanities and social sciences.
Wow.
And it's incredible linguistic diversity. The collection spans 23 languages.
23.
Yeah. I mean, the main focus is on German, English, French, key Kurdish dialects like Kurmanchi and Sorani, Turkish and Arabic. But having material in so many languages really reflects the global nature of Kurdish dispersal and, you know, the diverse sources of scholarship and documentation out there.
Wow, 23 languages and over 17,500 titles. That sounds like a powerhouse resource. And how accessible is it? Can anyone just walk in?
It's a reference library, so you can't borrow the books. But yes, it's open to the public. They're open weekdays, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m., and also by appointment. They also have an online catalog, an OPAC, which is basically a searchable database of their holdings.
Okay.
Though the sources do note it's still in beta, so maybe not perfect yet, they provide copying services. And thoughtfully, they offer a free research service for individuals with disabilities who can't visit in person.
That commitment to accessibility is great. The sources also briefly mention some affiliations. Anything important there?
Yes. The sources note the EZKS has projects like Kurd Watch, and they mention a close relationship with the Kurdish National Council. It's just mentioned that this affiliation may subtly influence the collection priorities.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an interesting point about how external relationships can sometimes shape what gets archived, you know?
Right. Makes sense. Okay, let's shift south to Bonn then. There's Neven Zentrum for Kurdische Studien EV, established a bit earlier, back in 1992. How does Neven complement or differ from EZKS?
Neven shares that goal of being a central resource, but it seems to have a slightly different angle. Its mission is explicitly framed as bridging academia, politics, and the public, sort of functioning as an independent forum.
Okay.
Their library collects scientific literature, similar to EZKS, but they specifically highlight the importance of collecting gray literature.
And what exactly is gray literature in this context? Why is that important?
Think publications you wouldn't typically find in commercial bookstores or academic journals. So things like community newsletters, organizational reports, pamphlets, leaflets, independent newspapers, stuff like that.
Ah, okay.
And our sources stress that collecting this material is crucial because it captures the sort of contemporary pulse of community life, activism, and discourse in a way maybe academic books might not, or at least not as quickly. It's also multilingual German, Kurdish, Persian, Arabic, Turkish included.
So they're really aiming to capture the lived experience and the activism on the ground alongside the more academic study.
Precisely. And the sources note that a particular strength of Navend is their holdings on migration, integration, asylum law, and Kurdish life, specifically within Germany and the broader Middle East region.
Mm.
Apparently, their founding rationale, according to the sources, was to directly address that recognized lack of dedicated studies and, frankly, the suppression of Kurdish culture and history in the homelands. So they created this independent space for documentation and research in the diaspora.
That context really emphasizes their importance, doesn't it? What about access at Navenend, similar to EZKS?
Also a publicly accessible reference library, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can search their collection via their online bibliothèque. They have specific hours, Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Copying is available. They also offer more tailored support by appointment, like help with literature searches or connecting researchers with experts. Like EZKS, their existence really fills a critical void, providing that infrastructure for academic study and community memory where it's historically been denied elsewhere.
The sources also mentioned the Kurdish Center for Studies, KCS, founded in Germany in 2014. Is that another physical archive or library space?
The sources don't really indicate that KCS maintains a large physical archive collection in the same way EZKS or Navend do. Their primary focus, according to the materials we looked at, seems to be more on independent research production and publication.
Ah, I see.
Mostly in Arabic, Kurdish, and English, and fostering international dialogue. They focus on analysis, including looking at intersectional issues like gender, disabilities, the environment within Kurdish contexts. It seems their model leans more towards generating and disseminating new knowledge, maybe using existing archives or focusing on digital output rather than building a huge physical repository themselves.
Oh, Hannah, the chai lady is here.
Mm-hmm.
Roj Bosch, Hannah. Ah, perfect timing, just as we were thinking about all those different types of materials and needing a little break.
Ah, excellent. Let's see today. Ooh, yes, the cardamom is really going through today. Lovely. Not bitter at all. Perfectly balanced, I'd say.
Mine too. Just right. Maybe she knew we were tackling some complex topics and needed the fortification. Okay, feeling refreshed after that wonderful chai. Before the break, we looked at the main institutional hubs like EZKS and Navend, but the picture is much bigger and frankly faces some significant challenges, doesn't it?
It really does.
Where else might we find materials and what makes their preservation so difficult sometimes?
Yeah, this is where the landscape truly reflects, I think, the grassroots nature of diaspora life and also the complex political context Kurds navigate, both globally and within Germany. Beyond the formal centers, you have valuable community archives, sadly, confiscated materials, absolutely crucial private papers, and then the rapidly evolving world of digital resources.
You mentioned community archives. Our sources point to the role of local centers, maybe in places like Cologne and Kiel. What kind of material do these hold, and why is it important?
These local centers are often the heart of community cohesion and cultural maintenance. You know, they're focused on things like language classes, cultural events, social support. And while they might not use the term archive formally,
right,
the records they generate, minutes from meetings, flyers for events, maybe internal newsletters, photographs of community life, these are invaluable grassroots sources.
Mm.
They provide a real bottom-up perspective on local community life, organization, integration. Our sources even give an example, noting that the Kurdische Gemeinschaft Rhein-Sieg Bonn e.V. has an archive section on its website.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, which serves as a kind of public record of their activities and news. This type of material is exactly what that archival turn we mentioned is interested in, documenting diaspora institutions and social history from within the community itself.
Now, you also mentioned confiscated materials, and our sources dedicate significant attention to a deeply contentious case involving Mesopotamian Verlag and MIR Multimedia. This sounds like a critical point in the discussion.
It is. It's a really stark and troubling illustration of the political pressures these archives can face. Our sources report that back in February 2019, the German Federal Ministry of the Interior issued a ban against these two entities.
Based on what?
Alleged links to the PKK. Following this ban, extensive police raids were conducted, and just an enormous volume of material was seized. Sources described the scale as 8 truckloads, or tons of items.
8 truckloads.
Yeah, including books, music, documents, equipment. These materials are reportedly now held by German intelligence.
Wow. That suggests a vast cultural and political collection was impacted. What exactly did these entities represent?
Well, Mesopotamian Verlag was a significant Kurdish publishing house. They produced a wide range of books, political theory, history, literature, cultural works. MIR Multimedia was a major Kurdish music production and distribution company. Its archive would have contained master recordings, contracts, materials, documenting decades of Kurdish musical output, much of it produced right here in the diaspora. Our sources frame this as a profound loss of access to a critical cultural and political collection created by the diaspora itself.
And how is this event perceived, according to the sources? What was the reaction?
The reaction documented in the sources is very strong. It was described by community members and advocates as barbaric, an attempt to suppress Kurdish culture and identity. Some even drew parallels to darker periods of German history when cultural materials were targeted.
Mm.
One analysis cited argues that the state action essentially turned an archive of cultural heritage into financial assets of a terrorist organization, which really highlights the contested legal and political framing of the whole thing.
So beyond the immediate loss of access, what are the broader implications for Kurdish archiving in Germany, according to the sources? Does this cast a shadow?
It seems so. This event vividly illustrates the acute political sensitivities and legal complexities surrounding Kurdish cultural and political activities in Germany, largely due to the PKK ban. The sources suggest this confiscation and the very unclear status of the seized materials has likely created a significant chilling effect on other Kurdish cultural organizations.
And then they're scared?
Yeah, it makes them apprehensive about making their own collections visible or accessible, fearing similar raids or legal repercussions. It's a potent, real-world example of that tension between state security concerns and the preservation of cultural heritage and political expression by a marginalized community.
That really underscores the precarious nature you mentioned earlier. Moving to another type of material, our sources also discuss renewed attention on private archives and personal papers. Why is this focus important now?
Yeah, the archival turn has definitely brought these private collections to the forefront. These are materials held by individuals or families, maybe especially those who were prominent figures in the migration waves since the 1960s. They contain incredibly diverse materials, personal correspondence, unpublished manuscripts, photographs, diaries, objects, you name it.
And their value.
Their unique value lies in providing these intimate, bottom-up insights that are often just missing from official records or state archives.
Insights into what specifically? What kind of things can they tell us?
Well, they can offer a window into transnational activism networks that operated across borders, into the social history of Kurdish families settling and building lives in Germany, and into individual experiences of migration, integration, and maintaining cultural ties. These collections can provide crucial evidence of lived experiences, including, as the sources also mentioned, the impacts of anti-Kurdish racism and discrimination in Germany. They become counter-narratives.
But preserving these must come with its own set of challenges, I imagine. They're not in institutions.
Absolutely. Unlike institutional archives, private collections often lack professional care, making long-term preservation really difficult. Then there are challenges with cataloging and making them discoverable for researchers. And then the complex ethical considerations of handling sensitive personal information, especially in a politically charged environment.
Right.
Digitization can help with access and preservation, of course, but it requires resources and careful planning.
And speaking of digitization, what's the general state of digital Kurdish archives and online resources? Is much happening there?
There's definitely a clear trend towards digitization. It's driven partly by institutions outside Germany, like the Kurdish Institute in Paris with its digital library, but also by the online resources provided by EZKS and Navenin that we discussed earlier. Digitization significantly increases accessibility, obviously, for researchers globally.
What are the distinct challenges for digital preservation in this particular context, though?
Our sources point out some specific hurdles. Digitizing older analog formats like oral history recordings, maybe, or music on tapes, that requires specialized expertise and equipment. Then there are complex legal and ethical issues around copyright and community intellectual property rights, like who actually owns the stories or the music.
Tricky.
Yeah. And the ethical challenges of making potentially sensitive cultural materials broadly accessible online, and of course the fundamental long-term sustainability question. How do we ensure these digital archives remain accessible as technology inevitably changes over decades? It requires ongoing planning and investment. It's not a one-off task.
Finally, just to cover all bases, our sources mention the German National Library, the DNB. Does that institution hold relevant materials for Kurdish studies too?
Yes, it does, though in a different capacity than the specialized centers like EZKS or Navend. The DNB's mandate is to collect all German language publications since 1913. So for Kurdish studies, this means they collect publications by Kurds writing in German, translations of Kurdish works into German, and academic research about Kurds published in Germany or in the German language.
So less specialized, but still useful.
Exactly. While it's not focused specifically on Kurdish history or diaspora life in the same way, it provides a kind of baseline of formally published material. It can also offer insights into how visible Kurdish voices and topics have been within the broader German public and academic sphere over time, just based on what's been published and collected there.
So bringing all of this together then, the major institutions, the community efforts, those confiscated materials, private papers, digital resources, and the National Library, what are the overarching challenges for preserving this rich but clearly quite fragmented archival landscape?
Our sources really underscore the precarious nature of this entire undertaking. The challenges are multifaceted, really. There are ongoing political pressures, particularly linked to the PKK ban and related surveillance, which creates that risk of state scrutiny and actions like the confiscation case we discussed.
Right.
There's the material vulnerability itself. Many collections, especially private or grassroots ones, simply lack resources for proper conservation, leading to deterioration over time. And there are ongoing complexities of representation. How do you ensure that the diverse voices and perspectives within the Kurdish community are adequately collected and represented?
And yet, despite all these difficulties, the importance of these archives seems immense based on what you're saying.
It truly is. Our sources reiterate their vital importance, especially for a stateless people whose history is so often contested or even erased in their homelands. These diaspora archives are crucial for countering those narratives of erasure, for asserting Kurdish identity and history on their own terms, for fostering community cohesion across generations and geographical distances, and for providing a documented basis for advocacy and human rights work. They allow for narratives to be reclaimed, reconstructed, and shared from a Kurdish perspective.
So they're definitely not just static repositories of the past. They're active.
Far from it. The sources emphasize that these archives are living, dynamic, and often contested sites. They are actively shaped by political contexts, by technological changes, by community efforts, and they are places where memory and identity are not just passively stored, but are actively constructed, negotiated, and articulated right now in the present.
Looking ahead then, what do the sources suggest is needed to support this crucial work? What's the path forward?
Well, there seems to be a critical need for greater financial and technical support for preservation efforts, professional cataloging, strategic digitization, especially for those at-risk collections like private papers or materials held by smaller community centers. The ethical challenges around access balancing research needs with individual privacy and cultural sensitivity, those remain central.
And the politics.
And the fundamental questions raised by cases like the confiscated archives, concerning community rights over cultural material versus state security concerns. Those are ongoing issues requiring continued attention and advocacy.
So it sounds like the future involves a complex, multi-pronged approach, not just one solution.
Exactly. The sources suggest the future will involve hybrid efforts, things like strengthening the capacity and resources of the larger institutions like EZKS and NAVEND, empowering grassroots community initiatives, developing strategic digital networks that can connect collections, and consistent advocacy for access and, ideally, control over these crucial materials. Collaboration between different initiatives, both within Germany and maybe transnationally across the diaspora, is seen as absolutely key to building a more resilient Kurdish archival infrastructure for the future.
Well, we've certainly journeyed through a truly vital and complex landscape today. We've seen the foundational work of institutions like EZKS and NAVEND, explored the essential role of community archives, grappled with the really challenging case of the confiscated Mesopotamian and MI materials, which highlights that political vulnerability, recognized the unique value of private papers, understood the potential and challenges of digital resources, and noted the baseline role of the German National Library.
Yes, it paints a picture of a diverse, dynamic, and sometimes, as we've said, precarious archival ecosystem. The materials within are just immensely important, not only for academic research, but fundamentally for the Kurdish community itself. They contribute to self-understanding, to cultural continuity, and to the vital articulation of collective memory in the diaspora.
And as the sources implicitly show, documenting the Kurdish experience through these archives adds crucial layers to our understanding of German society and history itself, doesn't it? It contributes to a more complex and inclusive national narrative.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up this exploration, maybe here's something for you, the listener, to consider. The intense effort required to preserve these often fragmented and sometimes contested archives isn't simply about remembering the past. It is a crucial, active process happening now, shaping identity, history, and political voice for the present and into the future. This is particularly true for stateless people navigating life in the diaspora. So, what does the story of these archives tell you about the enduring power of documentation and perhaps the struggle for narrative control in our world?
Thank you for joining us on this exploration today.
We hope you'll take some time to reflect on the significance of these crucial repositories and the work being done to preserve them.
Until next time, thank you for listening to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.